Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkle, as always, alongside Matty Owen Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. Hey, get to the Common Fan website, www.commonfan.co. Subscribe on YouTube, like this episode, sign up for the free newsletter, follow all the social media accounts, and generally keep up with all the fun and frivolity of the Common Fans. Also, Common Fans, what's more Nebraskan than football and beef? Oak Barn Beef is a family-owned farm right in Nebraska, shipping premium dry-age beef straight to doorsteps nationwide. Whether you're stocking the freezer, grilling for game day, or looking for a gift that actually impresses, Oak Barn Beef delivers. Check them out at oakbarnbeef.com and taste the difference of Nebraska-raised dry-aged beef. Friend of the program, Mitch Sherman, is back with us. Mitch, how are you?
I'm well. How are you guys? Thanks for having me on.
We're doing well. We're doing well.
Great.
Did you make the trip out to Pasadena?
I was not in Pasadena, no. I was at the first five Nebraska road games, and I watched the UCLA game from the comforts of my basement here. I'll probably be doing the same for Penn State, but then back on the road bandwagon for Nebraska's bowl game, wherever that takes all of us.
Yes, sir.
Nice. Do you have any bowl destinations that you're really hoping for?
Somewhere warm.
And I think that'll probably happen. I mean, Nashville definitely is not at the top of the list on the warmth schedule, but that's a distinct possibility. The Music City Bowl, the Florida Bowl games would be more likely if Nebraska's in that 9-win area, and that would be fun because I just think that would make for a great finish to the season for Nebraska if it can be aiming for a 10th win, even a 9th win, and to be playing against an SEC opponent. You get SEC in Nashville, you get SEC in the two Florida options, and then there's also Vegas and Phoenix. Any of those sound fine, to be honest.
better than New York in December.
Touché.
From a weather standpoint, New York was not great for December. I was, and from a cost analysis perspective, if you were there as a fan, it was also not great.
Yeah, hit you in the pocket.
It's something to do once.
It's a good time to go to New York, but
yeah, New York around Christmas and New Year's is fantastic. I think people should experience it. It's great from a tourist perspective.
Really cool
to see the city then, but yeah, it's not a traditional bowl experience at all.
Home Alone 2, that's all I envision when I think of New York Rangers. That's it.
That's
Home
pretty
Alone
much 2. What my experience was like, yes. Running around the city being chased by people.
Mm-hmm. You know, we have a saying on this show: after the last 10 years of Nebraska football, celebrate all the W's. And I think Nebraska fans are probably still in the phase of celebrate all the bowl games as well.
Yeah.
So we'll just be glad bowl game we can get. Yeah.
Because pretty soon it'll be playoff or bust, you know.
Exactly.
It almost got that way this year.
I was going to say, it's not already like that.
Well, speaking of the future, Mitch, one thing that I think, you know, it's made some waves, but I view it as a really significant development is when Coach Rule got his extension, part of what was discussed was he got a commitment for some additional resources to go get the kind of whatever players he wants to go get, whether that's in the transfer portal or on the recruiting trail. Mm-hmm. And then that came up again during his bi-week press conference, where he said something to the effect of, we have the resources now to compete with anybody in the country. We have the resources to go get anybody we want to go get. I read somewhere that that piece of whatever was committed to him was not in the sort of term sheet that was presented to the media. Can you tell us anything about that or what he's talking about when he talks about that sort of thing?
Well, there was some language in his contract, and the whole contract was given to the media, and it's available to the public. You can just Google it and find it on Nebraska's website, on the university system website. There's some language in there that is somewhat vague, but it requires Nebraska to remain competitive in that area specifically of resources that are made available for recruiting and the portal and retention. Retention is a big piece that you don't want to overlook. That's going to be essential in this offseason for Nebraska, not to lose players who are on track to help this program a lot, whether they've done it already in the past year or two, or it's just someone that they see as a valuable piece down the road. Those players can command big money in the portal too. You know, amazingly, word gets out that a third string wide receiver is in line, or a redshirting defensive lineman is in line to be able to help a Big Ten team in the year ahead. And so it's not just the players who made the contributions on the field here in 2025 that are going to require an investment. It can be players who are down on the depth chart but hold a lot of promise. So that part of it is huge as far as like what Rule was promised in terms of resources to keep Nebraska competitive. And then he spelled it out, as you said, TJ, on Monday of the bye week, in talking very bluntly about how Nebraska has what it needs to go out and get the best players in the country. And that's, I think, a little bit oversimplified to just say it like that, because sometimes even the best offer doesn't get you the player that you desire, just like you might see in free agency and professional sports. Players pick schools in college for reasons that go beyond just the dollar figure. Now, if you're so high above everyone else, there can be a situation where it's just impossible to turn down. But we saw plenty of cases in the portal last year where Nebraska was more than competitive for players that it was trying to get, and those players chose to go somewhere where they felt they had a better chance to win a national championship in 2025. So they're going to be contesting against that, that situation as well. But the fact that the money is there and that it's in the hands of Nebraska's collective and this is being discussed here in November is promising for what Nebraska can do in January. It's all going to be in January this year. We've gotten accustomed in the last couple of years to this stuff happening in December. There'll still be announcements in December from players and their agents and from the media that this player wants to go or intends to go into the portal, but the portal doesn't open this year until January 2nd, and it's just a short window. It's only 2 weeks, January 2nd to the 16th, when those players can go in and then exit the portal to their new school. So it's going to be a whirlwind with just a ton of activity that goes on in a 2 week period right after the new year.
So that's, I like that you brought that up. Mitch, just in this day and age, NIL is still like something I think a lot of average people have to wrap their heads around. A lot of people really don't understand how it works, myself included. So when we're talking about resources for the university, now that we have more of them, what does that mean exactly? Like, are we talking like, businesses are chipping in dollars to help fund this? Is the university doing something where they're giving money, or is it something completely different from that? Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, the university money hasn't changed. Nebraska has always, it's only been 1 year that the revenue sharing has been in effect, but the revenue sharing is the internal payments. It's $20.5 million. You're going to see that go up over the years to come, I think, it incrementally. So maybe next year it's in the 21 to 22 range, and football The football program is going to get somewhere around 70% of that $20 million to use as an internal salary cap. And every school in the Big Ten and the SEC is going to max that out, is going to hit that number. So you don't necessarily get an advantage. Nothing changed for Nebraska with its revenue share resources here in this season, as Matt Rhule made this public push to get more of a commitment from fans and donors. It changed in like the traditional NIL sense, which is the money that a lot of it goes through the collective through 1890. And as he mentioned on Monday of the bye week, the Pede family, which created 1890 and has largely funded 1890 through its existence, has stood in the gap here and has allowed Nebraska to remain competitive. Well, Nebraska needed more than that as an institution. It needed, yeah, whether it's businesses or individuals, it needed the money to come in to the collective. And it's not just that. Like, there are other ways that NIL can be a resource and can impact Nebraska's ability to retain and recruit. You're seeing more of these corporate deals that are coming down that don't necessarily need the direct involvement of the collective to facilitate. I mean, in an extreme example, you have Adidas that's a sponsor for Dylan Raiola, for Harper Murray on the volleyball team. Those are the two premier athletes at Nebraska who are getting money from Adidas. You know, stuff like that will continue to impact Nebraska's ability here to do all of the things that Matt Rhule wants to do. But for the most part, yeah, it's going to be deals that are done through the collective through 1890, and they feel, and we don't get those numbers. It's not something, this is not like something where you can file a Freedom of Information Act and say, you know, hey, does Nebraska have a $30 million roster here, coming in 2026. You have to just, you know, understand what the market value of an offensive tackle is, or of a quarterback, or you know, a lockdown corner in the portal. And then you can kind of get a sense of like what Nebraska might have to pay to get 10 impact transfers in the next cycle. It's not cheap, I can tell you that. And the price is only going up.
TJ, you're a politician. Why don't you tell us about the Freedom of Information Act for a little bit? Why don't you elaborate on that, TJ?
Jeff, we want our listeners to keep listening. So we'll take a break from that.
Okay.
Well, Mitch, you recently wrote about roster limits causing the 2026 recruiting class to be smaller than usual. And we talked with Evan Bland a little bit about this, but assuming most of this roster does stay intact, which, you know, as you just mentioned with the portal, you know, it's never guaranteed. What positions do you think are most important for this coaching staff to target in the portal and really on the recruiting trail too?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's, I've thought about this more here in this bye week than at any point during the season, and started to crunch some numbers a little bit. So Nebraska's at 125 players right now on its 2025 roster. It's 20 over the limit that you can sit at 105. So in June and July of this last year, and this was per the judge's ruling in the House settlement, Nebraska was allowed to designate 20 players that were essentially non-counters toward that 105 player limit. And those players will remain non-counters for throughout their careers, whether they stay at Nebraska or leave. You could go, if you're a non-counter, you could transfer to Tennessee and you'd be a non-counter there as well. So you kind of have a superpower as a player like that, that makes you, it's easier to take that kind of a transfer. They were supposed to be, and I think that Nebraska remained within the spirit of this. They were supposed to be the players who would have been cut if it had been a hard count, hard cap at 105. So I expect they didn't release the name of these players who were designated as non-counters. None of that stuff is known to us. I would like to maybe ask in a non-press conference setting, just to get a sense, like, are there seniors among that group is the first question that I would have, because if there's seniors among that group, then they can't be at 125 next year. Like, let's say there's five seniors among those 20 players. then they'd have to be at 120 next year. And anybody in that non-counter group who would leave Nebraska for the portal in this next cycle is also going to drop you one player. So it's at some point when all of these players either leave or because their eligibility is expired or they transfer, then Nebraska will be at 105 for the duration, as long as that 105 rule stays in effect. So I think it's important to know that when you start to look at the numbers for what Nebraska can do in recruiting and in the portal here in the 26 cycle. So they're going to have 19 seniors on the team, which is going to bring them down to 106 with no transfers yet, either way, in or out, for the 2026 team. And they have 11 commits right now who are set to sign on December 3rd. So 106 plus 11 gets you up to 117. I assume that all of those those 20 who are non-counters are still coming back. So 117 minus 20 gets you to 97, which means you would have room for 8 transfers. They're going to take more than 8 transfers. And last year, Nebraska lost 30 players to the portal. You add in if 30 go again, and you got room all of a sudden for 38 transfers. Now, if you get 3 more commitments this year between now and December 3rd, that brings it down to 35. I don't think they're going to lose 30 players to the portal this year. I think it's going to be more like 15. Last year, they had some other things going on. They were trying to reduce the size of the roster because of this 105 thing that was coming in. All said, I think Nebraska's probably going to be looking at a transfer class that's somewhere in the range of 15 to 20 players in January, which is where it was at a year ago. But, you know, that's just my best guess at this point, without knowing how many of the designated non-counters are seniors, without knowing how many players they're actually going to sign on December 3rd. Like I said, right now it's 11 commits, and without knowing how many players are going to go into the portal in January, I think it'll be around 20. And to me, to get back to the answer to your question, to me, defensive line, the middle of the defensive line, like finding you spend all the money that you have to, all the money that makes go above what even makes sense in spending to get, you know, overpay for a big run stopping, space eating defensive lineman who can dictate the way that offenses are able to use the running game against Nebraska. We've seen that be a problem. And while it's been the quarterbacks who have done a lot of damage, I think where you start is in the middle of that defensive line. They're not necessarily going to shut down Bryce Underwood or, you know, Nico Iamaliava, but they can. It's a great place to start in bulking up your run defense. Like you need a Ty Robinson there in the middle as an anchor. I think they're in pretty good shape on the edges on the defensive line. Like I think another year of development for Williams Winery and Keona Davis is going to turn those players into difference makers. They've already shown flashes of that, but I think they could be difference makers next year. So I don't think Nebraska needs to like hit the edge rusher spot extremely hard in the portal this offseason. They have promising players there. They have to keep those players, but they have promising players there in the system. So that's a big bonus for Nebraska, because those are expensive players to go get in the portal, which frees up more money to be able to spend on the interior of the defensive line. And then the other spot, obviously, to look at, well, there's two other spots that are obvious to me. One is offensive tackle. We've seen the issues that Nebraska's had with offensive tackles in pass protection this year, in Nebraska's losses, 17 sacks and you know, one season ending injury to Dylan Raiola because of breakdowns in pass protection, and then running back, because we don't know what's going to happen with Emmett Johnson. And even if Emmett Johnson were to come back, I would say go get another running back and allow him to share the load, because I think what he's done this year has been a little bit of an anomaly. I don't know that you can count on that kind of durability from any back in 2026 with the schedule that Nebraska's set to face.
Yeah. Geez, listening to you talk about sort of the numbers with the roster, it's like they need a PhD just to keep track of all that.
There's a lot there that's in flux. It's really not that. I mean, If I knew the makeup of all of the non-counters and I knew how many they plan to sign in a couple of weeks. I have a pretty good idea of how many they plan to sign. Like, it won't be more than 15. And the big thing is how many players are going to leave. Then it's like simple addition and subtraction, and you end up with
that's too hard for me.
Jeff struggles.
Bust out your Texas Instruments graphing calculator to get your answer there, fella.
Well, let's pivot to this year's team, Mitch. Offense looked awfully good against UCLA. What was your take on what the TJ Lateef led offense did in Pasadena?
I mean, the first four possessions produced four touchdowns. So pretty tough to argue with that. And at that point, you got a 28-7 lead. I think Nebraska took its foot off the gas a bit and wanted to let its defense win the game, which it happened. As we've seen in other games this season, that can get a little bit hairy. I think Nebraska fans would have liked to have seen maybe another touchdown in that game to like truly put it up. Nebraska seems to have been in a spot in maybe three games this year. You know, I'd look at Northwestern. You'd look at Maryland as games where Nebraska had an opportunity with maybe one more score to truly put it out of reach. And those were the moments where things got a little conservative. And I think this goes back to just who Matt Rhule is as a coach. And he's allowed things to open up this year. I think he's given Dana Holgorsen, for the most part, especially in the first half of the year, like complete control to do whatever he wanted to do on offense. And then I think there were just some issues with the injuries on the offensive line and the ability to pass protect that necessitated Nebraska to go to more of a run heavy system. That wasn't like Matt Rhule stomping into the office and saying, Dana, you got to do this. It was just obvious from watching the results that there had to be some changes. But, you know, moving forward, you would like to see Nebraska in a game like the UCLA game a couple of weeks ago to build that 28-7 lead and then boom, one more punch and it's over. If it's 35-14, a couple minutes into the fourth quarter, UCLA is not coming back from that. But as we saw, it got close and Nebraska needed to put together a 4-minute drive with a freshman quarterback who had to make a couple of throws that were nerve wracking, I think, for Husker Nation, in order to run the clock out of that game. Otherwise, you're giving the ball back to Nico down 7 points at home with not just an opportunity to go down and score, but an opportunity to go down and win. Because I don't doubt that UCLA, with the way that, you know, they've played since Deshaun Foster was fired, that UCLA wouldn't have gone for two if it scored there in the last 30 seconds of that game. And with that quarterback, you feel pretty good about the ability to get one in from 2 or 3 yards out. So that was, I think, a little bit too much. It was more than Nebraska wanted to endure. But by and large in that game, I mean, Lateef was outstanding with his composure and his ability to handle what Nebraska asked him to do. It wasn't a completely watered down game plan. They ran the things that they would have run with Dylan Raiola. Certain elements were simplified, but in no way it was TJ going out there and having like only one receiver to throw to. He was going through progressions. I think the nature of his play is he's a little more quick to pull the ball down and run if one of his first two reads isn't there. But the options were the options existed for him to go to a third or a fourth read, which is a lot for a freshman quarterback, a lot to ask of a freshman quarterback in his first start against a Big Ten opponent, but they didn't shy away from that. And he made good decisions throughout the game. And then Emma Johnson was spectacular in that game. He did what Matt Rhule asked of all of the Nebraska players in Lateef's first start, which was to just do a little bit more, go a little bit further. And if everybody does a little bit more on offense and defense and special teams, then you're going to make life easy on this freshman QB. And that's kind of how it played out, in large part because of the production contributions that Nebraska got from Emmett Johnson.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the offense, it definitely has more explosive weapons than we've had in a really, really long time. So I guess, Mitch, I'll address the elephant in the room. Do we have a potential Heisman Trophy winner on the roster right now?
Not in 2025. Well, I mean, yeah, if you want to look down the road in the future, I mean, is that what you're asking me? Are you asking if Emmett Johnson has a chance to win the Heisman in 2025?
No, actually, I was talking about TJ Lateef. He's the greatest player we've ever had.
I got you.
I called it. I knew he was going to crawl up from the depths and put this team on his shoulders. No, Emmett Johnson for real.
Jeff's been on the Lateef train for a while, and now he won't stop talking about it, man.
Well, you know, I was right. I'm just saying. I was right. No, in all seriousness, there's people that talk about Emmett Johnson having a realistic shot at being considered for the Heisman. Is there any reality to that at all?
No, he's not going to win the Heisman this year. The Heisman is a weird award, and I mean, he could have a chance. I mean, not like a good chance, but the other award that goes to, or the other, like the most notable one that goes to what's supposed to just be the best player in the country, the Maxwell Award. It's way more realistic that he could finish in the top three in that voting, because it's a smaller pool of voters, and it's more people who are actually watching college football. There's nothing he can do short of running for 400 yards in each of the last two games against Penn State and Iowa to even come onto the radar of like 50% of the Heisman voters out there. That's just the way it is. It's a huge award. It's like, it's bigger than, like, just the aura of the Heisman is bigger than what the Heisman actually is. The criteria is so vague on what the voters are supposed to look for that it allows voters to not even tune into the sport on an intense level. And for most people, it's just a popularity contest among the quarterback who is in charge of the team that looks like a national champion when the voting is conducted in early December.
Yeah.
Occasionally you get a year like last season where Travis Hunter is a transcendent player and he's just so awe-inspiring to watch because he plays 130 reps a game and he looks like the best player on the field when he's on offense and on defense. But it's so rare. Like he's the first one, or at least the first one since Charles Woodson in 1997 to occupy that kind of a spot. Usually it's a quarterback, and there've been some running backs recently or somewhat recently, like in modern times, that have won it, but they've played for Alabama, you know, and, you know, on a national championship caliber team, in a year where the QB play was a little bit underwhelming. The other thing going against Emmett is that this campaign started in November, and the campaign is great. Like, I commend Nebraska for doing it because it's going to get him notice among the people who vote for All-America teams. It's going to lock him up, I think, as a first team all Big Ten running back, which is great for Nebraska. And if he does choose to come back, it gets him a start for next year, when sure, you know, he could be a legitimate candidate, a realistic candidate. He's a legitimate candidate now, but he's not a realistic candidate. It's just, it's too late in the process, and there's too many quarterbacks who are out there. You know, the number one team in the country, Ohio State, the number two team in the country, Indiana, the number three team in the country, Texas A&M, the number four team in the country, Alabama, all of them have quarterbacks who are playing, you know, at what you could argue is a Heisman level. One of those guys is going to win it.
I see.
But don't you think I kind of feel like it should be celebrated that we even have a guy that's in the discussion, right?
Yeah. So, his name got brought up at some point.
maybe he wins the Doak Walker Award. You know,
it'd be great.
So,
and having a Heisman campaign, well, they're not going to start a campaign for him to win the Doak Walker. Some schools do go down that road. Some schools are just more straightforward about it. Ohio State is actively promoting Jeremiah Smith to win the Biletnikoff Award. Now, part of that is because they're promoting Julian Sayin, it's their quarterback, to win the Heisman. But yeah, Nebraska said we're going to go big on this, and some of the Heisman stuff, a lot of the Heisman stuff crosses over, and you know, if you're picking the Doak Walker, you know, you're aware of what Nebraska's doing here in the Heisman space.
Yeah,
sure.
I think Jeremiah Love's got it on lock anyways, guys. We all know
oh,
that.
God.
Come on now.
Can we put him back?
The Doak, you're going with the Notre Dame for the Doak Walker.
I'm going with the Heisman.
Oh, Love for the Heisman. Okay, well, I mean, he's the one guy. Hey, look, he's the one guy along with Jeremiah Smith. He left. So who am I talking to? Love is the one guy along with Jeremiah Smith, but Love has been maybe more consistent this year, who like could invade that area he'd certainly get to New York. But he plays for a playoff contender, and people knew his name last year. Like, he was tremendous in the CFP last year, playing through injury, and you know, he is way more on the radar of voters than Emmett Johnson.
You heard it here first, yes.
Oh God. Well, let's talk about Jeff's future Heisman candidate, TJ Lateef. You know, Mitch, Penn State and Iowa are going to be tougher tests for TJ and Dana Holgorsen. Yeah. And we need to let those games play out. But, you know, Lateef sure seemed to provide a spark against UCLA. And there's a lot of excitement, obviously, about him in the fan base. At what point do we start having a conversation about a quarterback competition?
If he looks great in these last couple of games, then, you know, because it kind of comes down to, like, so with Nebraska's general manager Pat Stewart and the people in that department, which is bulked up in a completely new kind of way here, even just in the last 12 months. So the conversations that Nebraska will have in the office in December, before they get into portal season, is what's the value of every player on the Nebraska roster, and like dollar value. So it's tough, I think, to make a payroll if you have two quarterbacks that are commanding, you know, seven figures, or, you know, in Dylan's case, like he's making quite a bit more than just seven figures, like quite a bit more than $1 million. So if TJ plays to a level where he is commanding that, and some of that's just like how the market is set, like what are other teams willing to pay him, and then Nebraska's going to kind of have to get there to keep him, that's when it becomes a conversation that Nebraska has to have. Maybe Nebraska can't afford to have $2 million quarterbacks on the roster in 2026. I don't know. Maybe they say, no, we can't. We that's how badly we want both of these guys. Or they have to make a decision. You know, in the past, you might let this thing play out if both of them were to stay and have a competition in the spring, which is a weird thing to say because Dylan's a 22-game starter and really has never been challenged at any point in his time at Nebraska. But it's different. Everything's different now in college football. And you have to think about these things in December when they put valuations on players and start to talk about the kind of money that they're going to get paid next season. I think it'll take care of itself. If you know, just because of the forces around the sport, if TJ plays to a very high level in the next couple of games, then he's going to elevate his value to a point where you probably can't have both of them, and it won't even have to be Nebraska's decision. Nebraska might say, well, we want to keep both of them, and we're going to pay them both. We're going to find a way to pay them both market value. But then the players have to be on board with that too. And one of them is probably going to see that there's not an opportunity to be a guaranteed starter in the coming year. So it could be either one. One would decide to hit the portal. So I think it'll take care of itself. That's if TJ plays at a really high level in these next couple of games. If he kind of comes back to earth and you can see that like the best situation for Nebraska is to have him like continue to be an understudy for Dylan Raiola next season, then Nebraska is absolutely in play to be able to keep them both. TJ will get coveted and he'll probably get some kind of an offer to leave Nebraska that's greater in monetary value than what Nebraska is willing to pay to retain him. Or maybe not. You know, maybe Nebraska will overpay for a backup quarterback. It might have to, and that's fine because if he's your future starter, and then they'll go into the spring and have both of them. And the great thing about this next year, the great thing for the schools, is that you don't have to worry about the portal again in the spring. In the past, the portal would reopen for a week or two in April and into May, and you'd have a whole nother round of stress after spring practice. No, it's one portal window this year. So if you retain somebody and they're on your roster on January 17th, then you know in almost every circumstance, and you know, unless a coach gets fired, that you got them in August.
Wow. Nice. Well, as a Nebraska fan, I would love to live in a world where they're able to have both of those guys, but yeah. It, you know, just doesn't feel like it's reality. But
it may be reality. Yeah, we'll have a better idea. Yeah,
a better idea. I made the point the other day that you know, when's the last time Nebraska had a quarterback that started every single game in a season? Like I don't remember there being it seems like there's always been at least one or two games where we're starting a backup or a third string guy. So I don't know.
Other than Dylan last year, Dylan did it in 24. But
thanks, Mitch.
It was last year, Matt. No, there was a run of several of many years. You know, going back to like the Taylor Martinez days, where Nebraska was always and Heinrich Harburg as the backup last year got reps. You remember him coming in?
Oh, yeah.
And having to finish the UCLA game a year ago. For Dylan, but Dylan did actually start every game. But you know, prior to that, it was a long run of multiple quarterbacks, and there were some years like the they're running together. But
Andrew
the
Bunch.
Yes, I was thinking more of the Jeff Sims and the Harburg and Purdy. Chuba Purdy. Yeah, I mean you got more than two who've had to start games.
Yeah.
Andrew Bunch, Riker Fife. We need to move on to Penn State, but Mitch, I kind of want to, this is of great interest to the fan base, I think. And Dirk Chatlin just went on with the I-80 club guys of Josh Peterson and Jack Mitchell. And they had a really interesting discussion about the quarterback situation. And Dirk made the point that, you know, he sort of suggested that Husker fans were sort of so touched, so tickled that Dylan, a five-star quarterback, would come to Nebraska that, you know, they've sort of been hesitant to criticize him at all. And sort of like feels like, should we even be having this discussion that he could, you know, that Latif could potentially get the job or whatever. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Dylan did a lot for the program that goes beyond just coming and playing quarterback. He did open the door for players to follow him that would not have been Huskers if not for Raiola. And some of that is from his visibility, because there were players out there in the first year that Dylan was in the program who said, well, you know, if a five-star quarterback who was committed to Georgia and Ohio State before he signed with Nebraska was willing to do this, then, you know, I'm on board. Like, that legitimizes Nebraska as a place that other top talent can go. And then once he got to Nebraska and got entrenched, the work that Dylan did to help Nebraska get Isaiah Hunter, Dane Key, and others in the portal last year, like Dylan has been the front man for Nebraska from day one. Even when he was a recruit, he was out there. You know, he committed to Nebraska late, so he wasn't able to do like what you see Trey Taylor doing right now in the class of 2027 in peer recruiting. But from the day that he committed and signed with Nebraska, which there was only a couple of days in between those two events, he has been the number one advocate for Matt Rhule and his program on the recruiting trail from a player perspective. So I think Nebraska fans should have a lot of appreciation and admiration for him doing that. And then on the field, like, you can always find reasons to criticize someone, but I don't know that I necessarily agree that Nebraska fans or media in Nebraska have been hesitant to criticize him. I think it's been like an intelligent process. You have to consider like what he did, what he accomplished to come in and start 13 games as a true freshman and to set the school record for freshman completion percentage and passing yards and to lead Nebraska to its first bowl game since 2016 and, you know, to the win against Wisconsin and to come through the kind of mess that he endured in the middle of the season where Nebraska had to make an offensive coordinator change and adapt to a new coordinator. And like, I'm having a hard time like being critical of Dylan for much of anything in that freshman season.
Yeah.
It wasn't perfect. No, but like who was out there expecting it to be perfect? If you thought that he was going to come in and
irrational Husker fans.
And if that's what you thought, then I suppose, yeah, like go ahead and be critical. He's not been perfect. And this year, through the nine games that he played, I mean, the biggest criticism I have is that he sometimes brought the sacks on himself.
Yeah.
And that the 16 sacks against Michigan and Minnesota were not all the fault of the offensive line and the running back and the wide receiver's inability to get open. That 25, like one third to one quarter, if not more, of the responsibility rested on Dylan and holding the ball, at times holding the ball too long, and then at other times just not having the pocket awareness to make that one move away from the pressure. And you see that with great quarterbacks. Like Dylan's not a five-star in every area. Like he has a five-star arm and you can find other traits that are five-star caliber. Like he doesn't have five-star ability in evading the pass rush. So he's got to work to get better at that. And if he's going to be a starter in the NFL and he's going to turn himself into a first round pick, then he needs to improve at that pocket awareness stuff. And maybe that is where he can spend time, like watching tape and maybe talks to his dad, maybe talks to Matthew Stafford. You know, Matthew's a little busy right now, but there are, it's pretty soon, you know, in a couple months he won't be, and Dylan will still be doing rehab. Like he has great resources at his fingertips that he can go to improve that area of his game. And I think if he improves that area where he just gets a little bit better at evading the rush, stepping up in the pocket, feeling the pressure, you know, having that sense of when somebody's coming at his blind side, getting rid of the ball on schedule, that then I have almost no complaints with him. Like he threw 18 touchdowns and with six picks this year, which was a big step up over a year ago, threw for 2,000 yards in 8.5 games. Like he was pretty good. He's pretty effective. Like he's as close to being an NFL. He's the closest Nebraska's had in maybe ever to just being NFL ready as a quarterback in this offense.
Take that, Jeff.
I just had questions about his capabilities. just like anybody else. I'm sorry.
All right, moving on to Penn State. this Penn State team they were in the top five. They're a couple plays away from beating top 10 Oregon and top 10 Indiana. And yet they're 3-6. They've fired James Franklin and they haven't won a conference. They're 0-6 in the Big Ten. What do you make of this squad?
Yeah, the craziness of it. It's like, this is like some Nebraska teams but even more to like the level of extreme. Like Nebraska's team in 2021, where you could have that, you could make that same like, okay, here's the quick elevator resume of Nebraska's 2021 team. They were a 3-win team, but they were the greatest 3-win team in the history of college football. They lost to, you know, Michigan by 3 and Ohio State by 9 and you know, all of these other games by one score. Like it just the whole thing sounds bizarre. Like Penn State takes that to even another level this year with being 0-6 in the Big Ten and ranked number 2. I mean, Penn State was on the cusp of being the number 1 team in the country, and here they are, you know, on the brink of losing the ability to go to a bowl game. To me, it does make kind of a difference. What happens on now? So, is this podcast going to come out before or after Penn State plays Michigan State on Saturday the 15th?
For the common fans, we're recording the day before that game, but it's going to come out Monday.
All right. So, you know, by the time you're watching this, if Penn State is 3-7 or 4-6. I will say this, that makes a difference to me in what I expect in Happy Valley on Saturday. If Penn State rights the ship somewhat and looks good against Michigan State, looked good against Michigan State on Saturday, then I think Nebraska is walking into kind of a dangerous situation, because then all of a sudden they can rally around this. All right, let's go to a bowl game. You know, let's keep playing into January, December, extend this thing, probably get picked for the Pinstripe Bowl. The Pinstripe Bowl would love to have Penn State. And I don't know if Penn State would love to have the Pinstripe Bowl, but like, hey, New York City in December, at least it's a different kind of experience. Like, at least it's something that those players wouldn't have done. Yeah, they got the College Football Playoff semifinal last year. And now you get Yankee Stadium in after Christmas. Fine, like, it's not a very far trip for Penn State fans. Wouldn't have the same issues that Nebraska fans did a year ago in getting there. So they could at least play for that, and they could sell that in the locker room as a reason to get fired up on Saturday. But if Michigan State somehow went out and Michigan State's probably more of a mess than Penn State, but if Michigan State were to have gone out and won that game, and Penn State is out of bowl contention when Nebraska goes in there, then I think it's kind of like all hope is lost, and I don't even know where Penn State summons the motivation. Yeah, it's senior day, but I mean, seriously, like, the season is completely 100% gone if you have 7 losses. So I'll withhold judgment on what I think that game is going to be like for Nebraska. It's going to be tough no matter what, because Penn State has talent. A lot of it, but a 6-loss Penn State team versus a 7-loss Penn State team to me is 2 different animals.
Wow. Well, you just mentioned it, Mitch. We've been talking about it here on the podcast. That, you know, you to the outsider who doesn't look at what the scores were, watches the games, Penn State looks like a dumpster fire, but they do still have Penn State level talent, and we know they're not going to roll over for the Huskers. So how do the Huskers match up with Penn State?
You got a key on stopping the run game. I mean, with Drew Aller out now, the passing game is not what it, you know, it's not going to be one of the more dangerous passing games that Nebraska encountered in the 2025 season. They're going with a backup, and the bread and butter for Penn State is that two-headed running back monster of Dick Singleton and Catron Allen. And you know, while those two guys haven't had the seasons that Penn State envisioned, you know, there was thought that like both of them could be all Big Ten, or at least one of them would be an All-American this year. And it's been, you know, Singleton's been good, but it hasn't been to the level that Penn State expected. So, but still, Nebraska's going to be facing a massive challenge to stop that run game. And then Penn State's defense is formidable. So actually, Catron Allen is the one of the duo who's had the better season. He's got 10 touchdowns and 730 yards, and Singleton has been more of a disappointment. 363 yards through 9 games. They're both dangerous. The Penn State defense is, you know, they're going to have guys who come off the edge and can get after the Nebraska quarterback in a way that the Huskers have only seen this year against Michigan. So it's going to have to be a game plan where you put TJ Latif into situations where he can have a quick release, where he can get outside the pocket and find receivers on those shorter crossing routes, some intermediate stuff to Lindenmeyer and Hunter or Key. And Nebraska's going to have to run the ball to kind of neutralize the Penn State pass rush. Like, I don't think Nebraska wins a game that gets above like 24 points for the winning team. So, and the special teams are going to have to come up big. Like, obviously for Penn State to have lost six in a row at this point, it's not doing a lot of the little things right. So, and Nebraska has done little things right through this season with special teams and turnovers. Definitely the best in both of those categories in 3 years under Matt Rhule. And you could include the Frost regime in that conversation as well. So the best since at least 2016. I mean, 2017 wasn't any better the last year under Mike Riley. It's been a long time since Nebraska's been as good as it is this year in special teams and turnovers together. So they're gonna have to find a way to make some hay in that area.
Yep.
Yeah. Mitch, the last question I have for you isn't particularly Husker related, but just college football in general. This year's been kind of wild with firings of head coaches. With James Franklin getting the axe. I mean, you got the situation with LSU right now. Brian Kelly's nuts. You've got, let's say, Florida, UCLA, Oklahoma State, Auburn. You go on and on. And everybody talks about how, like, there's parity in college football now, and the talent is way spread out. And so you need to have patience with some of these programs. Indiana probably just screwed up the whole argument because they're having just a weird run right now that's not normal. But they tell us you need to have patience. You're going to see upsets. Teams aren't going to always go undefeated and just blow everybody out. But on the same token, you've got these athletic departments that seem like they have zero patience now, and they're cutting coaches off immediately. So I guess, is this going to be the new normal for college football, just cutting coaches off mid-season, or will it eventually kind of level off? Maybe people get more comfortable with it and return to form where you ride it out with coaches more often than not. Kind of curious what your opinion is on that.
I do think that this year is an exceptionally volatile year in the portal. I'm sorry, in the coaching carousel. Yeah. The coaching portal. Coaches can transfer portal. How about that? We should institute that. Yeah, I don't think every year is going to be like this with the number of you listed some of them off and. You know, there are others. I mean, Arkansas is looking for a coach. And there are some that I think will be looking for coaches fairly soon that aren't yet that are also big names. This can't happen every year. But as far as the patience, I don't know that that's going to increase. There are the LSU thing this year. I think will stand the test of time as maybe one of the more bizarre showings of impatience and impulse in the way that LSU acted, not just with Brian Kelly, but in then firing the athletic director and the way that the governor stepped into that. Like, that's kind of something that can only happen at LSU or or a very small handful of schools. There might be a couple others where that could happen. Sadly, like, including Nebraska, maybe in the most unusual, like, parallel universe, maybe the governor of Nebraska fires the football coach and the athletic director in a 1 week span. I wouldn't totally rule it out in some future world, but
can't rule it out.
Yeah. I do think you'll continue to see a lack of patience with coaches. If one thing is going to change, and I don't know exactly where this starts or how it starts, but some of the crazy numbers that you see on buyouts, I could see like the pendulum swinging back in the direction of the schools, because how do they continue to afford it? You know, that it's all going to get private equity deals and, you know, have reserves of hundreds of millions of dollars so they can just go fire coaches and pay $50 and $60 million buyouts every 3 to 4 years if it's not on schedule. That doesn't seem sustainable to me. So I do think we might be reaching a point with the crazy buyouts where it's going to come somewhat back into, not back into check, but like start to move in the other direction. And what that might look like is more of these schools that are firing coaches with huge buyouts, that they start to hire coordinators. And there has actually been quite a bit of success in recent years in college football with big programs that have hired coordinators to be head coaches, like, you know, Dan Lanning definitely comes to mind. But there are other cases too where
Marcus Freeman.
Right. Where this has worked. And those coaches are not gonna command the huge buyouts. Like they will eventually. But like Lanning's first contract, Freeman's first contract, you know, they didn't include $70 million buyouts. So yeah, that's one way where you can start to see that area slow down. I think that's the only, like that's about the only thing that you could point to and say like the sport is going to move in a direction that's more sensible in the near future.
Love that.
Fantastic stuff, as always, from friend of the program, Mitch Sherman. Check out all his great stuff at The Athletic. Athletic and the Locked On Nebraska podcast. Mitch, thanks for hanging with us.
Yeah, thanks again for having me. It was fun. Yeah,
great to see you, as always. Common fans, this will be our only episode going into the Penn State week, and then we'll be back to 2 episodes a week the next couple weeks after that. hey, Common fans, be kind to each other. We'll be back at you soon. In the meantime, as always, GBR for life.
Holy moly! Man, woman, and child did that. Put them in the aisles.
And Nebraska takes the lead.